Welcome. It is the Starship Rokon Show with Anna DeVlantis right here, 720 WGN.
They've solved the mystery that we opened the show with yesterday of why Sean Spicer had an off-camera, no video, no audio recording press conference.
Correct. According to Steve Bannon, who is, as you can tell, a charming and funny man. Steve Bannon was asked this by a reporter by way of email, and Steve Bannon's response was, because Sean's getting fat.
And then they followed up, you're joking, right? Or you're serious? Nothing. Dead radio silence.
Yeah.
So there you go. But they are still accepting applications for his replacement. Nothing. No follow-ups on that.
Yeah.
Exactly. So. If you're good at saying, I will get back to you on that, you could apply for it.
Sean was asked about this during the press conference today. And notice how the reporter, we have the question in here, right? Notice how the reporter has to kind of do a little dance around this. Because, you know, everybody in the room's like, oh, Sean probably did gain a few pounds. We've all gained some weight since Donald Trump got elected. Everybody who's, he has, Sean has, I have, everybody has. It's because we're stress eating. Because the man
is a real thing.
The man is human chaos. But go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, you know, what are the qualifications for White House press secretary? You deal with public humiliation. You're told one thing and then it changes.
Because Steve Bannon is in such great shape. Steve Bannon's the only guy I could outrun. Me and Skilling together could outrun Steve Bannon. Thank God.
He looks like he's a cheeseburger away from a heart attack.
He is, right, yeah. All right, well, here's what was said today.
There are reports that your role is changing here at the White House. I wanted to know if you can address those reports. And are they true or not? And if so, can you tell us what's in store?
Right here. So you can keep taking your selfies and tell a few folks. But look, it's no secret we've had a couple of vacancies, including our communications director, that's gone for a while. We've been seeking input from individuals as far as ideas that they have. Mm-hmm. We've been meeting with potential people that may be of service to this administration. I don't think that should come as any surprise. But we're always looking for ways to do a better job of articulating the president's message and his agenda. And we'll continue to have those discussions internally. When we have an announcement of a personnel nature, we'll let you know.
He's kind of nervous there.
Right. And by the way, he's wearing a really dark suit today. Did you notice this?
Does it fit well?
And a bit. Oh yeah, and a big thick tie. Like he's got all the tricks that you know, the slim down tricks, slimming tricks.
Yeah, that helps. Black is slimming. Well, he's going to get a promotion, so maybe he has to wear nicer suits.
I don't think so. I'm going to be honest with you.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
That was what they're saying. He would be moving into a strategy position.
Aha! At the RNC.
Oh.
That is going to be my guess right there. And we're going to make the argument that, yes, this is all really about just this is a better opportunity for him.
Right.
Couldn't be better for him than it is right now.
Well, you kind of predicted he'd be out of there after the Holocaust comment. Remember that? So it's sort of.
Well, that's a long time ago.
And that was a long time ago. Right? You said by June 1st or I can't remember, July 1st, you said.
I think I got July 1st. I'm going to get like July 1st for him, August 1st for Reince.
Yeah.
I might have moved those both back a month because we got a month closer. But, you know, but the point here is the same. I told you, I still stand by the fact that someone's going to jail, right?
That was one of your predictions.
And that a major cabinet person is going to leave before the summer. And we already had that with Michael Flynn. So we had, and this was, and this, I predicted all this that weekend after he came back, right? After the weekend of the inaugural, and he came back on that Monday, and he was arguing with people about how many people were in the crowd, and you're like, you know, this has got nothing to do with nothing.
The Tribune has a great opinion piece today about what it would take to fill the shoes or become step into that position and all the things you have to know and how impossible the role really is. And one of the things that you have to practice saying in the mirror is the tweet speaks for itself. Or the tweet says the opposite of what you believe it says. There's a whole list of them. It's pretty clever.
Actually, I think the if you chose this in the drinking game, the president was very clear.
Yes.
If you chose that sentence, you die of alcohol poisoning 15 minutes into.
It wouldn't be pretty.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be a good
game. You'd be hospitalized 15 minutes into the press conference. Well, the president was quite clear. president was very clear. The president was very clear this morning. And when they asked about the tweet about North Korea, or actually the tweet about North Korea came out while the press conference was going on. I thought that was nice. That was a nice touch.
I like when he says the tweet speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm. That's the best.
And then everyone's like, well, what? Yes.
Well, that's all you can say.
Except for the Washington Post tweet, which was, it meant the opposite of what it said. I'm under investigation. Remember?
Right.
So that didn't
that's
mean.
No, that's the opposite. That's on you. That's on you. The Washington Post says I'm under investigation. If there were more than 140 characters allowed on Twitter, this wouldn't have been a problem. That's Twitter's problem, not our problem. That's your problem because you're part of Twitter. Goes around full circle.
Got it. Yeah.
Hey, Sean.
Come on, Sean.
All right.
Yeah. Impossible role.
I would like to buy, there's one, you know, people are like, who would you like to have dinner with?
Mm-hmm.
From any time in history to present, my answer would be Sean Spicer. I would like to sit with him and I would like to buy him a drink or two or three. And I just like him to just, I just want to watch him decompress. And
sure.
I want to be able to say to him, it's okay, man. It's going to be okay. You're out of it now.
Yeah. That definitely was a stressful position. You could see it on his face. You could feel it.
Yeah.
You just felt it there when he was talking about his own role. He was careful about
what was
saying.
Your lowest moment, Sean, when you had to come out with the hanger still in your suit and tell everybody that there were millions more people at his inauguration than actually were? Or when he actually didn't allow you to go in and see the Pope, the Holy Father, the person, the role that means the most in your faith? And you were on the list, and they took you off the list because he didn't like what you were doing. Was that the lowest moment? What was the lowest moment?
Yeah.
Or when Steve Bannon called you fat. Which was the lowest moment for you?
That totally doesn't help. Doesn't help. Just, I think the dodging he's had to do is just, it seems as if he's been given some marching orders when he walks into those press conferences, and then later the president will tweet something or do something
exact
that
contradicts
opposite. It. Yeah, so
it's, No, you don't understand. That's not the opposite. That's what he meant to say when he didn't mean to say it.
I'm so confused.
All right. I think we all are.
Yeah.
This is the way we all sit now. Mark Sapelso is going to join us.
Good.
He'll be able to explain the whole thing. He's got it all figured out. That comes your way. But first, Violetta Panamenik. She has the WGN traffic trouble spots.
The pods are headed out of Dodge, but not before one last meet and greet with a few fastballs at the friendly confines. Cubs, Padres, Wednesday at 1 on WGN TV Sports.
I'm glad you said that.
No, that was a
hard
one to read.
Here's Mark Sapelso right now joining us from the WGN-TV newsroom. Is it a night game tonight?
We have the White Sox on our air tonight, but I believe the Cubs are playing a night game this evening.
Interesting situation. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Quite controversial. You know what? It's still, I know it's been like 15 years or something. Still cannot get over the Sox being on WGN.
I know.
I'm still totally screwed up by it.
Are you still tuning into Channel 44?
I do. I go to Channel 44. And you know what? It's so funny because I keep waiting for them to speak English so I know what to do. I figure the Sox are coming. I just don't know when. I think like a lot of us, when Channel 44 went to On TV, which again was a total, complete cluster mess.
What was
right?
On TV? I don't
on
remember
TV
that.
Was
I remember this.
The first pay subscription service television in
right.
Chicago. They took Channel 44, and if you wanted to watch Channel 44, you had to buy a decoder, and you had to put the decoder. And this is like an antenna, right? I mean, this still was antenna television,
kind of unscrambling.
Yeah, and you'd have to unscramble on TV, but the Sox were on TV, and some other program was on TV, and then at night. It was dirty movies. Now, here's the thing about the dirty movies.
When you say dirty, do you mean pornography?
I do mean that, Kevin.
Make sure you explain it to the kids.
Yeah. So, that's where it used to be on television, not just your phone. So, now, here's the deal. The way that they scrambled the picture, Mark, you'll recall this. They cut the picture in half.
Okay. So you got half the porn movie.
So they cut the picture in half, and then they inverted the sides.
Yeah.
So it was basically, you know, it you got the porn movie, and the audio was there. That was the other part of it.
Yeah, that was the other thing.
You could kind of make, you could figure out what was going on.
Yes,
half a screen is usually enough.
Yep, it was. But then the thing is that you'd have to, It was very Middle Eastern. You have to read it from right to left.
Yeah,
is how you would have to do that.
Yeah,
and you'd be able to work it out.
But you know, it's striking what a pubescent teen can do.
Flexibility of the teen mind.
Yeah, it was hieroglyphics to moms and maybe adults over 40, but to us 13-year-olds.
We got it.
Clear as a bell.
Oh, yeah.
Clear as a bell.
Totally understood what was going on there.
Sure.
And I wanted to I think that was Eddie Einhorn, who just passed away this year.
I think you're right.
Who put that on. And, you know, and the one thing, and Eddie Einhorn was a genius.
Well,
and
it was ahead of its time.
Yes. And the Reinsdorf-Einhorn combination changed, you know, Chicago sports and everything forever.
Probably American sports on television, yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, without question. And so the late, great Eddie Einhorn, I would like to thank him for that.
Helped you get through your teenage years.
Yes, there's a lot of angst in my teenage years, and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My dad tried to be sort of the first with a lot of things. Like, I know he had a big beta machine, you know, and then, then VHS, whoops. And I know he had that on-TV thing for a while, and then Sports Channel or whatever it was after that. I mean, we were...
Sports Vision.
Sports Vision, yeah.
Yes.
He was buying things that I was like, okay, well, whatever. All right, you know.
So the games weren't on the regular television at all. In that case, they were only on TV. That was the only place you could see it.
I don't remember. I don't remember the transition, and I'm not sure every game was on.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how it worked exactly because I was young enough that.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember thinking, Channel 44 was so hard to get in clearly.
Yeah.
You could hear Harry and Jimmy Pearsall screaming about something, but you know you couldn't necessarily get the picture all the time, and so it was frustrating.
It's true because, you know, as a kid, you just want to watch baseball.
Right.
So the Cubs were on in the afternoon.
Yep.
The Sox were on at night. And there were times, sometimes I would go to, like as a kid, I'd go with friends or family, go to the Cubs game. Then you get on. They didn't call it the Red Line back then. We didn't call it the streetcar either, like my dad did.
The L.
It was the 95th.
Oh,
it was,
the 95th.
You know, it was like, it was either you're going to Howard or 95th.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're going the 95th, and you just get down there on the Howard line, and you just and it didn't matter if you got there. First of all, you walked right in there,
pretty much.
They weren't taking tickets, right? It was sort of like I'm away. What do you got? $5? All right, we'll take that. You got $3? We got that.
And on TV, it always looked really dark at Old Comiskey. You know, like it looked like it wasn't lit properly. You know,
wasn't.
The brightest thing were Dick Allen's white shoes, and that was it.
It's true, though.
I know I'm dating myself.
It is really true, though, that it on television. Well, because we never had night baseball in Chicago that counted. You know, Channel 9 and Channel 40. They didn't set their cameras for this.
No, that's true.
And they had old technology, the old lighting technology that was, you know, from like The Natural. You know, things were blowing up.
Right, it would go poof.
Right, so it was not like now. You watch stuff on you watch ESPN's baseball coverage.
Oh my gosh,
it's incredible.
It is it's the best you could possibly imagine. It's the best they can make that game look.
I think I read something where it's actually making it look too good. Where you know, for those who are nostalgic for baseball, which is most of us, you know, it almost looks too clear. You know, you're sort of used to looking at Ernie Banks' 500th home run with Jack Brickhouse calling it.
Yeah.
It's a little fuzzy.
Yeah.
Even when you were watching it live.
Right. Right. Oh, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
Right. As soon as Cliff Mercer was done giving the news, now Chicago Cubs baseball is on the air. And then all of a sudden, you know, they'd go over and everybody wearing the Channel 9 jacket, the whole deal.
Yeah.
And they would go, hey, welcome to the friendly confines. And then they would do that thing where the camera was over them looking down onto the field.
Yes, remember that?
And then every once in a while they would do it in a chroma key.
Yes.
I was on the road, and then the field would move in back of them.
It looked like
did you want a Zenith toaster oven? Wait, not Zenith. Quasar television.
You got one of those for what? Doing what?
For being on Leadoff Man.
Yeah.
Oh.
The coaches or the players would be on like Rick Monday's on Leadoff Man.
Hi, everybody. Jim West here with Dantley Garages for the Leadoff Man.
And then you get a 19-inch Quasar TV or, you know, and it was like, oh, this is great. What am I going to do with it? Toaster ovens.
Yep.
Oh, God. All right. What's coming up on your news?
You know, we got Governor Rauner speaking at the top of the 6 o'clock hour, I believe, on Facebook Live. In anticipation of the special session.
Take that
session,
live.
It's called. Yeah, we'll take it live.
We will as well.
Yeah, we'll take it live.
And then analysis afterwards.
Yes.
Dude, would you like me to come over for that?
You know what? Phone in. Is the caller there?
You've done that
before. Row from 95th. What do you got to say?
You phoned it in before, haven't you?
I phone it in every day.
That's right. That's right.
Thank you. I see what she did.
Uh-huh. Hey, listen, Anna.
Look at all of a sudden. Look at like that. You know, she's right now. She's like, I just don't give a crap about any of this. I'm gonna take you all out. She hasn't slept in like 4 weeks.
I really haven't. My husband's been sick, but I don't want to bring everyone down. So you know, it's just one of those things we're not sleeping a lot in our household. But he's getting better.
I really kind of like Anna at this level.
Do you?
Yeah, where she's like over everything and everybody all at the same time.
Yeah.
You know what? Let me tell you how I really feel about this.
Well, but Anna's version of let me tell you how I really feel is now that really wasn't terribly nice.
I know,
no, it isn't.
Right. No, you've seen a little worse.
No,
it's
she's not Judy Pilak, but she's you know
it's getting there though.
Yeah, she's about halfway to Judy, which is really something. It's good though. I like it. I think it's you know shows grit.
Feisty.
Yeah, I like feisty. Feisty's good. All right.
Okay, guys.
Thank you very much. We'll see you at 4, 5, 6, 9, and 10.
Have a good day, and Anna have your husband feel better.
Thank you very much. I'll tell him.
All right. Judy Pilak, whose name was just taken in vain, she joins us coming your way in 2 minutes. All right. Here he is, Congressman of the Ro Contra with Ann Atlantis District. Mm-hmm. Of Illinois.
Yes, he is.
Congressman Adam Kinzinger.
What's up?
And we like to play this music because he's an Air Force pilot. Of course, the Top Gun was about Navy pilots, but whatever.
Doesn't matter.
But now this really applies because we had...
I don't fly fighters, but whatever.
I know, there's a lot of inconsistencies here. But the point is that now you had a real situation with the Ruskies. You know, and kind of a mid-air thing that's being described. Now, you're a pilot, so explain this to me. This was a Russian fighter jet that made a high-speed pass approximately 5 feet away from a cruising RC-135, which is the size of a 707 aircraft.
Yeah.
How's that possible?
Well, I mean, it's possible and really dangerous. You know, typically when we play these intercept games, and so I actually flew for about a year or two a KC-135, which is the same plane, different mission. I flew that in 05 and 06, and you know, it's powerful plane, I mean, frankly, but you know, we would practice intercepts as just part of training with the fighter wing and all that stuff. And an intercept, usually they get within, I'd say 50 feet or something like that, 100 feet, just for visual confirmation. 5 feet, I mean, if it's really 5 feet, I've got to imagine that actually there was a mistake somewhere, literally that the fighter pilot probably made a mistake, because you don't get 5 feet. I mean, even seasoned fighter pilots hate air refueling because they get, you know, within 5 feet of a big aircraft. So it is, and if that's the case, and I'm not sure if it is.
You're
but
not even. The air refueling off of a KC-135, which, as you just pointed out, is the same airframe as this plane, this American plane we're talking about. I mean, that boom that comes out, you got 20, 25 feet from, you know, where you're away from that aircraft. Now you're slow and slow. You're slow behind it, but that's the point of it. But it's still, I mean, I can't, that it has to be a mistake or the number has to be wrong. But whatever it is, that's as close as you can get without crashing, because that fighter jet has got to be moving at 600 or 700 knots while the bigger planes at like 300 knots. There's no way.
But, and honestly, these their pilots are not that good. I mean, that would be tough for our pilots to pull off, and theirs are not that good. They don't get to fly much.
But if it's a mistake, I mean, maybe a mistake to get that close, but could it really be accidental that they flew in any distance between with the U.S. aircraft? I mean, that was saber rattling, posturing. What's going on here?
Yeah, it's show of force, and it's probably a reaction to the European Reassurance Initiative, where we have troops and buildups in Eastern Europe to protect NATO and defend the red line of Article 5. And, you know, it also could have been a reaction to what happened in Syria when a Vietnam-era relic, which is basically what the Syrian regime flies, was shot down for bombing American allies. And so, you know, they're going to – I mean, look, Russia is a powerful country, and I think that's important. They're not the United States. They're far, far inferior militarily and economically, but they're a great power. And And they're getting, you know, people are realizing that despite all their bluster in Syria and Eastern Europe, they really still can't hold a candle to the United States. So they're going to lash out in any way they can, short of a shooting war, I think, because, frankly, they know they're not going to win. And Vladimir Putin's a pretty smart guy.
Yeah, wait till he hears that you what you just said about him. Look out! Oh God, you're going to get a call from the White House.
An apology on that.
What are you doing? We're trying to get along with him. Well, what do you make of that though? Because we had Bob Baer on yesterday. You know him formerly of the CIA, and he said that he's been in that region for his entire CIA career. Speaks Arabic. He speaks Farsi fluently, and he doesn't understand who's side we're on anymore and whose side anybody else is on, because, you know, 2 weeks ago we were actually working with, we had advisors working with Iranian troops and Kurdish troops on an action in Iraq. Now we're shooting down an Iranian fighter jet. We've got the Iranians and the Russians and us are all working on another ISIS shot. And then today there is some question about al-Baghdadi, and I want to get to that in just a moment. That's the guy who runs, that's the head cleric of ISIS, and I want to get to him in just a second. Your thoughts on that. But do you understand what side everybody's on now?
It's really, really complicated, and I think our lack of action 5 years ago has way it's not our fault. It's really the fault of the actors in the region, Bashar al-Assad. But the failure of intervention and not, you know, Iraq-style intervention, but, you know, like Libya, but with a post-game this time, which, by the way, I think it's important to note, Libya, as bad as it is in far better shape than what Syria is right now. And so it's really complicated. I think it started with the Obama administration and to an extent has held over into the President Trump administration, which is, you know, this idea that we have to just simply go after ISIS. And so that creates a very complicated situation. We are trying to get people on the ground to support us only against ISIS, not against the regime. You know, these folks' chief enemy is, frankly, the regime, because they have 50 years of history between Assad and his father killing their, you know, their kids, grandkids and parents and everything else.
Right.
And so, you know, we have a very small focus. Honestly, the fight against ISIS is really small compared to the bigger problems in Syria, and it's getting very complicated. So I think what President Trump has done really well in this is he's put down red lines to say, you can't drop bombs near our allies because, frankly, we have guys embedded in that, by the way. Secondly, you cannot get into these deconfliction zones. And if you do, we're going to bomb you. And we're not going to go on TV and brag about it. We're not going to do more than publicize it through the traditional press release route. But here are our red lines. We will protect our people. And I think it's kind of that silent strength that actually is – I think that sends a stronger message to Russia than any – frankly, UN sanction or anything like that can.
Do you think the Russians got al-Baghdadi? There's some talk of that. And now, U.S., it was reported earlier today, Vox News reported, that the chief cleric of ISIS, not al-Baghdadi, who's the head of ISIS, he's the bin Laden for ISIS, if you will, but the chief cleric and an al-Baghdadi confidant was killed by U.S. Forces. Is that confirmable?
That's what I've heard. I don't have that from any other channel than what you've heard. And, you know, this is good. Every time we kill a leader, they talk about the head of the snake, kind of the Hydra. You cut a head off, a new one grows. True. But you get dumber people, frankly, that take over these positions because, you know, now you have to have somebody that was way down the food chain taking over. In terms of al-Baghdadi, we don't know. I would pour cold water on, I think, that excitement because – the Russians claim they did it and killed 300 ISIS members in the middle of Raqqa. I think we would have known if 300 ISIS members were killed in the middle of Raqqa, to include al-Baghdadi. And typically ISIS puts out press statements when some of their leadership is killed because it's a way to honor them. It's kind of an obituary, if you will, and they use it to drive more recruitment. And ISIS hasn't said a word. Now, al-Baghdadi is very different than other leaders. I hope he's dead, and I'll give Russians credit for it, even though only about 5% of their airstrikes are focused on ISIS anyway. But I'd pour cold water on that now. I just don't think it's overly credible.
Congressman, can I ask you about your Facebook post? Because it seemed like
a
very passionate call to try to encourage people to rise above the fray of this vitriol and restore civility. And you posted some, I think they were Facebook or Twitter comments that people sent to you right after the Alexandria shooting. Things like, I wish you were on the second base, and just horrible things. And it just, it feels as if, you know, you're calling for something that I think we'd all like to see in Washington for sure. And what you received there as a result, or, you know, because of your, talk about how that felt to get all those messages, and where do you think we are here?
Well, I have thick skin, and I didn't put this out as a woe is me, but I did put it out because I think, you know, it's the old idea of to expose darkness, you have to bring light. And I think bringing light to, you know, it's not just what people have posted prior. I wanted to stick with things that people said during and after the Scalise shooting. And things like, I wish you were on second base. Things like, you know, somebody was right to murder Abraham Lincoln. I mean, there, if you, and that's a taste. That's a small taste.
They're terrible. What you post?
And I've had colleagues send me stuff saying they're going to show up at the house and, you know, go after their kids. And I think to expose the darkness in people's hearts, not everybody, but some people's hearts and what they're willing to put on Facebook, I think you have to put it out there for light. I decided to cover the names up, but I was pretty close to leaving the names on there for everybody to see.
Yeah.
And and again, it's not so people can have sympathy for me. I know what I'm doing. But it's a call to action to people and to myself. I've said, you know, where I've made mistakes, I want to try to fix those, even though I'm a flawed human being. But we've got to have passionate, heated arguments. That's great. That's what we're supposed to do out here. But, you know, threatening people with violence and wishing that I was on second base or wishing that my good friend's, you know, 12-year-old was somewhere so you could go after them. I mean, these are the kind of messages that are being sent. And we have to bring light to that. People have to see that that's what's out there.
Yeah, And I think it's an important point, too, to call out those people for what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And they are
trolls.
They're very loud. They're very obviously, you know, the veneer of any kind of civilization has been ripped away here in some ways by social media, in some ways by the troll behavior of some on social media. And you've got, you know, varying degrees of it. And obviously this is the worst of it where you're making death threats.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
I think there's great comments people put too.
But I got to tell you something. The thing is that we need to instill a sense of civility in this, and we need, and to your point in your Facebook post, but I think it's also important that the leaders of this country, and that means members of the House of Representatives and Congress and the President of the United States and all, you know, need to behave in a civil way with each other. And that is the part that gets me. I mean, I know that the president wants to do this for politics because he's taking a cue. He's new to this, as his own people like to say, and he's taking a cue by what some of the worst actors in politics have been. They weren't successful with it, but he was, so he figures it must work. And he needs to make a change in his tone, his use of social media, because there's decorum and respect for the office. Everyone has to have it. Now, the citizens out there and the I don't even know how to describe these people who put these posts up, or that guy last week who went and, you know, tried to assassinate two dozen members of Congress. You know, there aren't words that I can even use to describe how much I despise that these people who are doing these kinds of things. But in the meantime, we do need to raise the rhetoric so that the argument cannot be made. Well, you see, everybody's doing it now.
Yeah.
And that's just not right.
And here's the point. So let's say, you know, the rhetoric on the left is heated, so the right gets heated, then the left gets more heated, then the right gets more heated. At no point is it going to end where one of the sides says, you know what, you're right, because you got so heated that I believe you're right. This, like, what's the end game here? And the end game is worse and worse and worse. And so I say this to my friends on the right and my friends on the left, is both sides are to blame here. And if you think only the other side's to blame, you're especially to blame by not recognizing it on your own side. We all have something in this. We can debate, but the level of hate, calling people bad people, I don't know many or any bad people in politics. I know people I disagree with, though.
I'll tell you one thing. I just want to go back to my fourth grade gym teacher.
What did your fourth grade gym teacher
I don't know who started this, but I'm ending it.
That's right.
Finishing right now.
And then I remember being dangled by my hair over the free throw line. That's all I recall at that moment. All right. Oh, my God. Does that work? Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, Congressman. Appreciate your time,
thanks,
as always.
Congressman.
You bet.
There he
thanks,
goes.
Guys. Take care.
Congressman Adam Kinzinger, Violetta Pidermedic, WGN Turf Trouble Spots. Judy Palak standing by with the WGN News in 2 minutes. Rokan Show with Anna DeBlanche is right here, 720 WGN. Don't forget, coming up after 4:40, your chance to win a pair of tickets to the NHL Draft Weekend. It's coming up this weekend, including fan passes to the outdoor NHL Draft Fan Fest, the United Center. We're going to be there for that.
Yes, we are.
You and me and Kev. And
just released today, Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, Chris Chelios. The list goes on and on.
Wait, they just got released? What? What?
the way you said that made me a little more clear, would you?
Just released. They'll be attending.
The attendees will be, right.
As members of the Chicago Blackhawks.
Because there could be a Blackhawk or two released, or not released, but not traded, moved. Right? Isn't that part of some other thing that's happening?
Part of the expansion draft tomorrow.
Expansion draft tomorrow, yeah.
Marcus Kruger, Kruger, Van Riemsdyk.
Oh,
those are
good
names that you could be seeing shipped to Vegas.
God. Ouch.
Oh, God. I don't like the way any of this sounds. And by the way, but I do like the Fan Fest, so that sounds good, because they're paying for it right now. They feature 10 Blackhawks draft picks over 2 days, as well as free outdoor Fan Fest activities June 23rd and 24th. And like I said, we're going to be there on Friday, which is the 23rd, right? Yes?
Mm-hmm.
I got that right? I hope so.
Friday is, yes.
All right, but it's Tuesdays. Alderman Brendan Riley's with us. It's Tuesdays with Brendan.
Is that what we're calling it now?
He's the alderman for downtown Chicago, or at least part of it, and made a little bit of news over the last few days because there has been some criminal activity downtown, including a young woman who was shot in Streeterville, which is I'm from Streeterville. That's where I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, where'd you grow up? I go, downtown, where? Streeterville, the mean streets of Streeterville, because it's the opposite of the mean streets, right? When I was a kid in that neighborhood, there might have been, from the time I was born till I was 18, there might have been 2 murders, and they were domestics, right? Nothing ever happened in Streeterville.
Sure.
Except my bike got stolen a number of times.
You probably left it unlocked.
But it was, sidewalk. Once out from under me, which was kind of fun. But it was basically, they looked tough, so I just gave them my bike. And it turned out they were from the local church.
It.
I don't know. It was a little weird. But like, you know, at night in Streeterville, it's like... And that's right in the middle of downtown.
Right.
Now you've got, and I've noticed this over the last number of years, you have more and more and more activity on the beach at night.
Kids
are coming down, you know, especially younger people, right? Mm-hmm. You know, teenagers and people in their early 20s coming down and causing all, bring that mess down up in here.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the lakefront's very popular. And on any given weekend, you can see 250,000 people using our lakefront. And as you know, at 11 o'clock at night, that's when we shut down the public beaches and the lakefront parks and the lakefront trail. And the expectation from the police department of the park district is you are to vacate that area and generally stay out until the morning hours when it reopens. But that's not what happens. It becomes a party outside. And frankly, there's not a lot of police coverage out there because it's supposed to be closed. And that's when you have incidents occur. And early morning Sunday, about 2:40 in the morning, we had a shooting incident at the 500 East Ohio block near the Ohio underpass, pedestrian underpass to gain access to the lakefront trail, and a young woman was killed. Mm-hmm. And so that's obviously a terrible tragedy and something that is incredibly rare downtown. But bottom line, we want to make sure that we get this thing under the control before the summer season is really in full swing. And so I recommended a series of strategies we might be able to implement to help the police have some more tools managing those huge volumes this summer.
So you made an urgent request, is what you told your constituents, to the Emanuel administration. Say, hey, we need the visibility of the police out there, cameras as well. What are you hearing about?
That's right. In fact, I've been talking to the mayor about police coverage and downtown safety over the last couple of weeks. So that's not prompted by this most recent incident. But I did spend a better part of Sunday on the phone with the police commander down here, who was fantastic, who called me in real time when this happened, to talk about some things we can do to help give the police department more tools and stretch their resources
and
farther.
One of these is to close down some of the pedestrian paths between the lake, right?
Yes. So there are a series of pedestrian access tunnels that people can use to get from Streeterville onto the lakefront trail. And my proposal is around midnight for us to start locking those again. There was a time years ago when these underpasses were locked at night when the lakefront was closed. For some reason, and I don't know why, that practice ended. If it worked 20 years ago, I'd suggest we should give that a try again. And the idea is if you limit the number of access points along the lakefront trail to just one or two overnight, the police can stay on top of those. They can dedicate some resource to see who's coming and going.
Right, but if you've got six of them, it becomes a much different policing situation.
Yeah, you become spread thin. And let's be honest, between midnight and six in the morning, especially on the weekends, our beat officers working downtown, they're responding to calls for service nonstop. Mm-hmm. And so this would allow us to have some extra coverage and really spread the resources better and, I think, smarter. Another thing that I've offered to do with discretionary infrastructure money that each alderman controls is to install new lighting where it's appropriate. I've asked the Bureau of Electricity to work with the police department to find those areas along the lakefront that are dark and invite kind of this kind of bad activity we're looking to dissuade, and see if we can match that up with some police cameras, those kind of discreet, they look like snow globes, mm-hmm. Put up on poles. That plus lighting gives us remote monitoring where they can deploy cars and bike cops as needed. So I really want to kind of throw every possible resource at this at the very beginning of the summer, because what we want to make sure we're sending a message to the criminals, this is not a great place to come down and act out.
I say that on Thursday night there was a shooting down on Michigan Avenue, right off Michigan Avenue in Monroe, right? And it appears to be a gang on gang situation. The kid who got shot is refusing to talk about who shot him, right?
Right.
Got shot in the stomach, and he's recovering from that. I had a couple of friends in from out of town. We're going out to dinner on Friday night. We mm-hmm. were driving right past mm-hmm. that intersection, mm-hmm. and these friends, they live in L.A., and they're like, you know, they're worried about Chicago. One of them's from here, and they're like, you know, whatever happened to my town? What's mm-hmm. you know, what's going on? Mm-hmm. And the other one who doesn't spend any time here was like, she's like, all you hear is scary stuff out of here. Well, and I said, it's very, very safe. Unfortunately, where we're driving past right now, there was a shooting last night. What? Yeah. Oh, wow. And you're starting to see, Cranes did that story about businesses having trouble recruiting CEOs or executive high, you know, the top level executives mm-hmm. to come to Chicago because they're worried about the taxes and the crime. I mean, that's the beginning. I think as Anna pointed out yesterday, that's a tipping point. That's the beginning of a cycle that you've seen happen to other upper Midwest cities. Detroit comes to mind immediately.
Sure.
That is unrecoverable.
Right.
Now, we have got to finally do something about this. And securing downtown is the beginning of it.
Right.
It doesn't solve the whole problem. But at least it solves it stems the flow of this like fear that, you know, Chicago is, you know, it's open shooting season. Because, again, I've lived downtown almost my whole life, mm-hmm. never seen it at a point where I'm concerned about the streets.
Sure. And look, you know, I think everyone expects downtown Chicago to be safe because it always has been. Mm-hmm. And it's so critical to our tourism and a convention economy. I understand that Cranes wrote their piece about it making it more difficult to attract top-level executives to town. I would say maybe that might be a little premature in that I have 46...
A wake-up call, though.
Absolutely, and I'm listening very carefully. But I've got 46 construction tower cranes up in the air in my ward. Mm-hmm. People are rushing to invest in downtown Chicago. So I'm not sure I'm ready to buy into that particular narrative, but it is a good warning call. If you lose the central core, you lose the city.
Right.
And I think that's a general planning principle, right?
Right.
And so we can't afford for that to happen. And while I'd say of all the 50 wards in the city, ours is the most fortunate. We do have the lowest crime rates. We have to make sure that these are very rare incidents if they happen at all.
All right. Now, what in terms of policing the beach, I made this prediction earlier, and I don't know if it'll come true or it won't. Mm-hmm. But, you know, more police officers are getting long guns, right? This is a mm-hmm. part of an initiative by the Chicago Police Department in high crime areas for visibility purposes. They want Chicago police officers to look more paramilitary than mm-hmm. than local police. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if where you stand on that. I think in some respects, I think will make some people until you get used to it. I mean, you travel throughout the rest of the world, you see this everywhere,
sure.
right? You see it in Mexico, you see it in Europe, you see it mm-hmm. anywhere you go. Even in Canada, you see it in parts. But to have people with long guns, you know, with military-style mm-hmm. weaponry, police with military-style weaponry, do you think we're eventually going to need that on the beaches or in the downtown?
That's not my preference. I think that the long guns and the semi-automatic weapons that you see in Europe and other parts of the world are also looking to dissuade terrorism and letting folks know who would commit big violent acts that we've got lots of folks with big nasty guns. You know, it cuts both ways. The optics suggest perhaps there's a much bigger problem than exists. I'd argue that the city of Chicago needs to do whatever it can creatively to get this under control. So I'm not going to rule anything out. I'm just not sure we're quite ready to go there yet. What I would like to see, though, is us finding a way to really maximize the use of our bicycle patrols. They get through neighborhoods faster. They can't roll up their windows. They go through alleys and bushes.
Right. They hear they're also a little bit above, too. They have a better line of sight.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And I think that's a really clever strategy that we've seen a lot of success with in the last 3 years.
And they're badasses, too. I mean,
sure
people go,
are.
Oh, it's bicycle cops. Are you kidding me? You do not want to get into something with a bicycle cop.
Well, and they look more intimidating than the guys who are on Segways.
Yeah, well, for sure.
Don't
but,
you,
think? You know, our bike cops are the real deal, and they can get around really quickly. And what a better way to deploy your force on the lakefront.
Oh, no, there isn't a better
than,
there
than
isn't a better
bikes.
Way. Yeah. I would also argue for a little better ass uniform for
the
police.
Biking guys?
Well, for no, I mean bike cops, you have to wear you can't really do anything about that because it, you know,
you have mobility and
you have to consider yourself with that, so they have to be in the shorts no matter what. But you know, for the guy, you know, like there are guys. I never understand this. Alderman, I got to ask you this because there are guys who like patrol like the Viagra Triangle. Right, and they're wearing the full jumpsuit. I mean, they swear to God, they look like they're in Mosul. Right? I mean, they're wearing green. They've got the sidearms. They got the whole thing. The
ladies like that.
Middle of the night, wearing sunglasses, and then they're going and chatting up people at tavern. Right, who are sitting on the street, and you're like, okay, that's, I mean, it's badass, but this is not where you need it.
Well, Ro, I think I'm pretty sure those aren't my beat cops. I'm fairly certain those are tactical units having a coffee break and saying hi to the guys and gals. I don't think those are the folks we've got patrolling down.
I would, but I want, but I got to say that those uniforms, they demand attention.
They do.
I think there should be more guys in those uniforms, men and women in those uniforms, in the city.
Two schools of thought. Some people say if you paramilitary up your officers, they have a harder time relating to residents and neighborhoods.
That worked great with the guy in Michigan Avenue who's gut shot, and he's like, I'm not telling you anything. I didn't see anything.
Yeah, well, I think when it's a gang-on-gang thing, no one cooperates, and you can kind of tell quickly. If a victim of a gun crime isn't helping the police apprehend the suspect, then perhaps they've got something hiding, too.
No question.
All right.
Big issue.
That's all. This is my two cents, Alderman. You know, and I think that I'm going to give it to you whether you like it or not. I'm like all the other residents in his ward.
Well, yeah, are you in the ward?
He just got redistricted out of mine.
Oh, thank God.
And I believe that is not a coincidence.
Very interesting gerrymandering there.
I lost a great media asset in Rokan when they changed my boundaries.
Yeah. They just carved out your townhome.
Right,
they basically did.
They carved my little area right away from him, and then they gave it to the guy like three wards over.
You take them.
Yeah.
But it was only your townhome.
I know. It was weird. And then the street that goes from it. It's like Kinzinger's ward, or his congressional district. It's in Iowa. All right. Thank you, Alderman. We appreciate it. Good luck with this, because it's, you know, this is a really important thing. And I think that creative solutions need to be, you know, people got to start looking at things. And you got to make sure that when the police are out there, that they are respected.
Right.
And that they're. And by the bad guys, they're feared, and they want to move on.
That's exactly right.
You know, and so
that's what we're shooting for. Right. We're really trying to get that done.
Long guns and jumpsuits. That's the way I'm looking at it. All right.
We'll see you next Tuesday.
Yeah, see you Tuesday.
Thanks, guys.
Violetta Podomatic's got the WGN traffic trouble spots.
CLTV now in HD. Watch the TV simulcast. Steve Cochran and Ro Khan, along with all the latest news, weather, and traffic, all in high definition.
You're on that show, too.
And me.
Yeah.
But I'm only seen from the side, so I only have to do makeup on one side of my face. It's kind of weird.
It's like Phantom. I like that.
Yeah, a little Phantom of the Opera. All in high def, of course, now on Comcast Xfinity Channel 352.
352.
That's where you go if you want.
Roger that, 352. Hey, oh my God. We have something for you coming up after the news with Judy Pilak at the bottom of the hour. Johnny Depp's lawyer had to write him a letter. His agent had to write him a letter. Explaining to him that he was broke. It is a piece of It's the letter from his agent, and then Johnny Depp's response to his agent.
Are you going to read it in your agent's voice? Honey, baby, boo boo.
Booby.
Booby.
Booby, sorry.
Yeah. It really gives you a little more insight into the mind of Johnny Depp and what he thinks about flying commercial. Among other things,
the row contra with Andrew Lantis, Mighty Art Players are going to have to put this together for you live and in person. These letters, it's how you imagine Hollywood is, and then you think, well, it can't really be like that.
No way, yeah, it's too much.
No, it really is. Turns out everything is as messed up as we thought it was everywhere,
and this confirms it.
All right, so that's coming your way, but first. I get the family and gather them around the radio, like 1942 style, right? And everybody's sort of staring at the radio.
It's a great idea.
Yeah, because this will be something right here. But first, Judy Pradlak's got the news 2 minutes away. Oh, I think you're. I can't wait to hear this. This is really a moment. This is really a moment.
It's like one of those moments you think, did that really happen? And yes, it really did happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm reading through this stuff. It's incredible.
Here we go. Here is the story. Johnny Depp is finding himself in a bit of a financial mess. And a fight began. Don't worry, I got this worked out. A fight that began when Johnny Depp sued his longtime business manager for more than $25 billion for mismanaging his finances.
Mm-hmm. $25 million, right?
$25 million bucks. Now, as part of a motion to oppose Johnny's lawyers' attempts to quash deposition subpoenas, is it like too much? A bunch of this stuff has been, a bunch of the emails back and forth have been released. Mm-hmm.
So you get a peek into the life of Johnny Depp and his extravagant lifestyle needs and the conversations he has that he thought were private with him and his agents and managers.
Exactly. So you've got his management team. You got his management team, his agent team. Now, this is a different thing in Hollywood. You can have a manager, an agent, a publicist, and a business manager. By the time you have made, for every $100 you make, after you pay the commissions to those different organizations, you take home about $3.50 out of $100.
It's probably true.
It's very close to being true. Yeah. Actually, Hollywood math is about $15. After the government, after taxes, agent, manager, and some of these fees are deductible, but still it doesn't matter.
Jeez, I don't know how they survive on that. Tough break for them.
Well, it's a funny thing, though, but this is how they end up in trouble. Because, you know, he makes $40 million for a movie, and he thinks he's got $40 million.
Then what is he paying the business manager for? Or the accountant?
Right.
To get a lesson one
time,
buddy.
And he pays it, but they all take a percentage. That's the thing.
Right, but they should be teaching him, hey, Johnny, this is how much you're getting when we pay you $100 million.
They just kind of want it. Yeah. So, now, the management team made public key correspondence from Depp's lawyers, his agent, as well as his sister, who somehow got involved in all of this.
Well, she apparently was taking out loans on his behalf, and he's saying that she was unauthorized to do that, and you guys were also unauthorized to be taking out loans for me, and a lot of signatures happened that he says he wasn't aware of for millions of dollars leaving the account.
Right.
Seen it 100 times.
Exactly. Exactly.
But it's a
This is a total freak show.
He had a $2 million a month lifestyle.
Hold on a second. Hold on.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Amber accounted for about $1.6 million of that $2 million.
Thank you, Johnny.
She moved on to a billionaire, though, so maybe if she was after the money, she did well.
Yeah, maybe hit that guy for a long time.
I don't know why you have to keep bringing that up. It really makes me very uncomfortable when you bring it up over and over again.
I can imagine it's uncomfortable because they didn't they put out pictures of themselves kissing on Instagram or something? Oh, Elon Musk.
By the way, she's got oral herpes.
Where'd she get it from?
She was with you, right? All right.
Wait a second. Hold on a second. I have to get it. I don't even know.
All right. Here is the... you ready?
Yes. Some of these are just beautiful.
This is from Johnny's agent. Manager.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny, sweetheart, baby, bubby, darling.
Added that.
I wanted to be sure to reach out to you personally before you left, since my email to you in September, I have done what I was told you wanted done, meaning getting us through. That's in quotation marks. Getting us through financially until work could start again. The good news is that so far we have been able to do that. Notwithstanding, I need your help in a variety of ways. First, we need to, in quotes again, take it easy on holiday spending.
Take it easy.
Second, we need to discuss some dollar limit in the upcoming Dillinger auction. Third, I need to be able to sit with you on your return from this trip and before you leave for France.
He writes...
That's pronounced France.
Even when you're from Kentucky, it's still pronounced France, yeah. Apparently. Mm-hmm. He said, forget the Dillinger office auction. I'll be starting the tourist on or about mid-February, which will be 20 mil. Then I'll virtually go straight to Pirates 4 for 35 mil. And then in turn to Dark Shadows for another 20 mil. I hope that by the amount that will be coming in from the work in the coming year, the back proceeds will put everything straight. Seemed like it should
be enough.
Baby,
sweetheart, listen, we're not quite there yet. Third, I need you to be able to sit with you on your return. We have to go over what we have borrowed in order to sustain ourselves and what we have to do to obtain those borrowings, what is now necessary to pay those borrowings back, and finally, to look realistically at income and expenses and to work together on how to make sure that we are back in balance. I know that things are hectic, sweetheart, darling, bubby, for you at the moment, but know that I am always available, day or night, if you want to discuss any of this now. My best, and please travel safely. Even though I took out Key Man Insurance, we'd make a lot of money if the plane went down.
Oh, gosh.
Joe.
Hope he didn't say that part.
Now, this is Johnny's response to Joel, his manager.
Joel.
By the way, this is all in lowercase letters. There's no capitalization. It's like E.E. Cummings.
Yeah.
Right? So he's got that conceit going
in
this.
The first letter. Yeah, there are no caps.
It's Dear Joel and the equal sign. That's the way it's written. Not comma, but equals. The only thing that is capitalized in here are the actual movie titles and his own name.
Oh, his own name, too.
Joel, first, thank you for dealing and getting me through. Secondly, I'm doing my very best on holiday spending, but there's only so much I can do, as I need to give my kiddies and family as good a Christmas as possible.
Actually, it's even worse than that. It's...
What?
As I need to give my kiddies and famille as good a Christmas as possible.
Is that the French?
Wait, does he have kids?
Apparently I do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know their names.
One of his kids is a model, a supermodel almost.
Yes, of course.
Oh my God, I never knew this, Johnny.
Yeah, now I've got kiddies and I've got a famille.
Did they get along with Amber?
You know, that is one of the reasons that Amber and I had to break up. She did not get along with my children. But then again, I had trouble introducing them to her because I don't know their names.
Stop.
And then you had to put them both in a timeout.
Obviously, I will be within reason. But regarding the plane situation, I don't have all that many options at the moment. A commercial flight with paparazzi in tow would be an effing nightmare of monumental proportions.
Plus, there's no leg space, so I can get that.
Flying commercial.
Plus, they don't allow me to take my sword on board with me.
The whole pirate getup doesn't work. It really doesn't. There's a dress code.
I sometimes like to travel with a musket, too. That is actually buried in my sash. They tend to frown on that at the TSA.
Classic TSA, giving people problems.
I know that I'll be starting the tourist on about the 15th of February, which will be 20 mil. Then I will go virtually straight to Pirates. Piratix 4.
That's how you spelled it. This part's beautiful.
For 35 mil, and then Dark Shadows for another 20 mil. I hope that by the amount that will be coming in from work the coming year, also back-end proceeds, everything will be straight. What else can I do? You want me to sail the same art? I will. You want me to sell something else? Sure. What? Boat is going to be chartered at New Year's, and Sony then will charter it for the tourist shoot in Venice. Other than that, I got bikes and cars and property and books and paintings and some semblance of a soul left.
Oh, gosh. That got dark.
Where would you like me to start? I don't like being in this situation, but there wasn't a whole lot of choice. As the Rum Diary was a sacrifice we would be happening. We knew would be happening. And the last proper paycheck was Public Enemies.
How much are you selling your soul for?
35 million.
In.
There's not much left
Deal.
Of it.
Turns out Johnny Depp was living paycheck to paycheck. I mean, he had the 20 mil covered expenses, then he waited for the 35, and then the next 20.
I guess that means something different for everyone.
I'll be doing my best, Joel. Love to you and yours.
Now, this is where it gets really good. This is where it gets really good. Here's Joel's response to Johnny's sister, who's asking about the money.
She's reaching out to try to get money, it sounds like.
Sister of Booby Darling Sweetheart. I know how crazy things are and how they have been. I'm fearful of the bank's reaction to still not having received back-signed loan documents. We are almost $4 million overdrawn.
Oh, gosh.
They are not likely to extend credit beyond $6 million. They've agreed to lend that, but they're threatening to withhold much beyond the current $4 million. Overdraft any day without signed documents. How can I help? And then she goes on to write that they have $1 million in overdrafts.
Oh my gosh.
$1 million in overdraft fines.
You think they're going to waive those fees?
Sometimes they'll waive the fees. They'll give you a little, you know, cushion.
Yeah, they do it for me once in a while, but you really got to beg them even for 35.
You got to imagine Johnny Depp.
I go in person. I get a lollipop, maybe a little coffee.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, the $35, I didn't know the bill was due then, and got a little...
They'll wave it for you some once in a while.
Hello, First National Bank. This is Johnny Depp. I'd like to tell you that I might be a little bit late in paying my $4 million loan and my $1 million in overdraft.
Sir, can you please speak into the microphone?
I was out of country at the time, and I believe that when I posted it out of France, perhaps it was lost in the mail.
What country?
France.
Were you there with your famille?
You're in the drive-thru, not the bank line, Johnny,
I'm
by the way.
I'm speaking to you by telephone.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I'm doing it.
I thought you were talking into
it. I thought it was through the tube.
I believe this is telephone. I'm not quite sure even if I'm talking into it.
You're in a Burger King drive-thru right now, Johnny.
It's got a cord attached to it. I don't know exactly what it is. But my agent, Joel, is making me make this telephone call even though I hate his guts.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to waive those fees.
Joel, I told you they weren't going to waive those fees.
$1 million. Oh, gosh.
$1 million in overdraft fees. But the part about the airplane is the best.
Well, he was the highest paid actor of 2016. And yeah. He couldn't make the numbers work.
That's what happens. I'm telling you, Hollywood math, you gotta try it. It's really something. See what he's thinking right there?
Mm-hmm.
He's got 20 plus, $75 million coming in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he thinks that means it's $75 million. But by the time he is done paying everything,
right?
right? Because he's got, you know, so $75 million, it's gone, you know, half of it. Let's say he takes 40 after the government, right?
Okay.
And then, but of 75, he's got another like 30, right? That is that goes away right off the top to all these other business interests.
Mm-hmm. And then managers, agents, the 10%, the 10%, the 10%.
So he's already lost 75% of it.
Gee.
Before he's going to get 25 cents on the dollar to start. And that's on a good day. That's not heavy. And now, obviously, he's got the bank coming after him.
He should go 5 for $15. This is ridiculous.
And then he goes to the Dillinger auction, and he pays $5 million mm-hmm. for a cast of Dillinger's junk, which is exists.
He did that.
I thought he was selling the Dillinger stuff.
I think he's buying at the Dillinger auction.
He was collecting a bunch of it.
Yes.
And, then
there's a cast of Dillinger's, you know, woo-hoo. Because apparently it was spectacular.
Oh. Hmm.
And so, and that goes for like $5 million.
If you can find a buyer, and obviously he did.
Yeah, well, buyer, no, but he's the buyer. He's the one buying. So they're who's going to pay $5 million for this? You know who's going to do it? That idiot Johnny Depp.
I would like the cast, the actual cast of John Dillinger's penis, please. And I'm willing to pay any price possible.
Do you think he gets his money back on the giant bunny that didn't make it in his possession?
That's right.
I don't know why you brought that up. It's such an incredible tragedy for me. But, of course, it reminded me of Alice in Wonderland, which, of course, was another tragedy for me.
Probably not financially. Just the movie turned out to be
all right.
Terrible.
I would like Violetta now to do WGN Traffic Trouble Spots, please.
I have to follow that.
Bro Concho with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right. Are we ready?
We're ready.
Are we ready? This is the most important part of the day.
It is.
It's time now for, well, you know what it's time for.
It's the Top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Brought to you by Builder Supply Outlet. True outlet prices every day. Now home of the Edge, kitchen and bath showroom.
It's the Top 5 on the Rokan Show. Let's go!
All right. Are we ready?
Let's go.
Number 5.
American student Otto Warmbier died yesterday shortly after being returned home from captivity in North Korea. His death could trigger U.S. demands on China to pressure North Korea over its weapons program. Here is Sean Spicer responding to it today from the White House.
We have been very forceful in our political and economic pressure that has been applied in North Korea. I think we will continue to apply that. And as I mentioned earlier, obviously China can play, has played and can continue to play a greater role in helping to resolve this situation, and we will continue to hopefully build on the relationship and the dialogue that we've had with China. I think there have been some positive steps that they've taken, both at the UN and economically, to help strengthen the case against North Korea. But I'm not going to get ahead of where we may or may not go, and obviously we hope that those discussions with China are productive and continue to move us forward.
And then about 20 minutes later, the president tweeted that, well, at least China tried. You know, one of those kind of like passive aggressive kinds of tweets.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they tried. At least you tried. Didn't really work.
He also mentioned it's a disgrace if he were brought home sooner. Obviously, blaming the prior administration. The result would have been different. Which I'm not sure that's the time to be saying that.
Bill Richardson, who was one of the negotiators, former New Mexico governor and member of the Clinton administration. He was one of the guys that was negotiating the release, and they said that they were working very, very hard on the release of Otto Warmbier for months. But then they ran into a roadblock because the presidential election, they didn't want to do – North Korea no longer wanted to negotiate with a lame duck president. They wanted to negotiate with the new president who could actually work on issues with them moving forward.
At that point, though, he could have already been in a coma, and he could have been for many, many months.
He clearly was at that
point. Clearly was, is what the doctors seemed to think.
He went into a coma 2 months after he was taken into custody.
Right.
So this is so you know
it's a tough thing to start saying that. I mean, he's gonna be buried. His funeral's on Thursday. It's like
to play politics with this or blame your predecessors. I know that that's the political game that gets played on both sides, but it's not right when anybody does it, and in this particular case, it's not right. And there is a response to that, which is that they were trying. Now there's still Americans in Korea currently. Mm-hmm. That there's three right now in Korean custody.
They're trying to negotiate their release.
And there should be a travel ban. But now the question is, what will the president do? And what does that tweet mean when he says, well, at least China tried? Does that mean that despite what Sean Spicer said from the podium today, does that mean that now it's really over? We don't need China to negotiate anymore. We're going to take this into our own hands.
Unclear. The British group that operated the tours has decided they will no longer do tours in North Korea.
That's a good plan.
Think it might be.
It's a good plan right there. Very good plan.
Not on my personal list of places I would want to visit, but obviously there's a lot of interest.
All right.
In how people live.
Yes. All right. Checking in at
number 4.
Now, you have heard the reports that the president called the House health care bill mean. Even though he was like celebrating it. Remember they had the beer party at the White House?
Right.
And everybody's jumping up and down. And it was really interesting because you had the Republicans who are afraid to have voted for it, but voted for it anyway, who all seem to be able to get out of the picture for that. Now, today, Paul Ryan objected to that characterization. Bill Hemmer on Fox News Channel sat down with Ryan, talked to him about the Senate tackling the health care bill, and he brought up the reported comments from the president last week about it being mean.
The president last week say what happened in the what passed in the House was sad. Do you need to win him over or Republicans in the House?
No, I don't really think that accurately reflects the president's sentiment about the House health care bill. I think that was some kind of a misinterpretation of a private meeting. I've spoken to the president many, many times. He's excited on what we did in the House.
So you're saying he's on board then?
He's on board. And also, the Senate's got their own legislative process. So they're going to take their amendments. And I assume they'll change the bill.
All right. To make it less mean? What does that mean?
I don't know.
Legislation like this doesn't go through the House or the Senate with no changes. So we naturally assume the legislative process will take its course. They'll make changes. But don't forget here what we're doing. We're repealing and replacing a law that is collapsing, that is failing, that's not working for people. And we want to replace it with a healthcare system that's better.
Okay. So I think we're all in agreement on that.
That sounds good.
That would be good. Because, yes, all of that is true. Mm-hmm. But will they? Or will it be something that actually penalizes sick people, which is kind of what you see in the if you're between the ages of 50 and 64, the House passed healthcare thing, and you have to, and you know, you're signed up for Obamacare or whatever it'll be at that point, American Healthcare Act, HCA, you're going to pay exorbitantly. And that's going to pass its way down into private insurance as well. So if you're covered under because you've noticed that private insurance has started to mimic some of the things that are going on in Obamacare. Because that's just a way to create, because a lot of those companies are involved in the markets. And so when the market moves, they move as well.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much. Good luck, buddy.
Yeah, I know. Donald Trump's trying to kill me.
Well, I think the whole process, the secrecy part of it, too, is concerning. John McCain came out today and said that he hasn't seen the language of the bill. He doesn't know what's in it. And a couple other moderates who they will need their votes for this have not seen it either. Now, the Democrats did the same thing. They did
But they didn't do it in secret, though. And they did it for a year. That went on for a year.
But when Senator Pelosi dropped it, she said, well, you'll see what's in it after you vote for it. Remember,
right. But there had been debate about what the merits of it were going to be. And then there were the specifics.
But the devil's in the details sometimes with that. It turns out to be so true, as we all found out.
Yes. But what I'm saying is that was we got screwed. What I'm trying to say is we got screwed on that deal, and they debated it openly for a year, and then at the last minute jammed it through. To do it totally in secret, how am I not going to feel like I'm going to get screwed? Because I'm between the ages of 50 and 64.
You fall in that category.
And I'm a white male with all kinds of issues, real and perceived.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to put it.
All right. This is not going to work out for me. Okay.
We'll see. Maybe they will be more open about it.
Yeah. Well, they're going to have to be at some point.
Mm-hmm. To get everyone on board. They held a 2-seat majority in the Senate. Republicans do. So if they need to get a few. They might need to get some people from the other side, as we've seen, if some of the members of the Senate who are on their team don't like what they see.
All right, we'll get to your 3, your 2, and your 1. But first, Violetta Pettermedic's got the WGN traffic trouble spots.
When I get older, losing my head many years from now.
Is this about my health care?
Will you still be sending me a
You're already in the group that you've pointed out.
I'm very upset about my health care.
Dependent on health care.
Yes. So when I'm 64. I'm not 64. I'm not even close to 64.
No, but you're in that window.
But I'm now in the window of 50 to 64.
Sometimes go wrong. That's when you need it.
I can't believe that. I feel like I'm 26 with a bad ticker. All right, here we go. Checking in at
number 3.
Ex-NFL lineman Ryan O'Callaghan, who played for the Patriots and the Chiefs, has come out as gay and says it was an NFL team staffer who helped save his life. O'Callaghan was selected by the Pats in the 5th round in 2006. He told Outsports.com that he wrestled with his sexuality during his entire football career.
I use football as kind of my cover for my life, and football was the most masculine thing I could do. So I decided to dedicate myself to football, and I thought it'd be a great cover. So I did whatever I had to do to make it work. I was real happy when I got out to New England. You know, people are really only focused on winning. That really worked out for my situation, where I was able to just focus on football, and they were going to focus on football and not, you know, the rookie. Why isn't he married? Why isn't he bringing a girl home when we all go out?
He said that as long as there are people still killing themselves because they're gay, there's a reason for people like me to share my story. That was his motivation for coming out there and putting it all out there.
Checking in at
number 2.
Rachel Lindsay was brought to tears on The Bachelorette.
Oh, no. Was it really a tough night for her?
And it was about her inner struggle. Being the first black woman, calling the shots as The Bachelorette when making the decisions.
Hard. A lot of men to choose from.
There's been a lot of fighting, and there's been a lot of bickering, and there was that guy who made a noise.
Oh, that was terrible.
And that was apparently part of her breakdown. I think all of it. It was just a little weird. So last night, she made it clear that the racial pressure is really weighing on her.
Being a black, I'm going to get emotional. The pressures that I feel about being a black woman and what that is and how I'm going to talk about it. I get pressured from so many different ways being in this position. And I did not want to get into all of this tonight. And I already know what people are going to say about me and judge me for the decisions that I'm making. I'm going to be the one who has to deal with that and nobody else. And that's a lot. You have no idea what it's like to be in this position.
Oh, my God.
I'm thinking she would get judged regardless just being in that position.
You are on a reality show.
I think that show would make me want to be celibate. Have you seen the guys she chooses from?
You are not Rosa Parks.
I'm judging her right now.
You
she gets an F.
You are on a reality show choosing a guy out of 30 freak jobs.
Exactly.
To marry.
That's the hard part. That would make me cry.
Right. To marry.
There I understand where she's coming from.
On like 3 weeks in a house with a, what do they call that? That suite. What do they call that? Where they go do the nasty.
Suite?
The fantasy suite.
Fantasy.
They got with a fantasy suite and a hot tub and champagne and that
roses
host guy,
everywhere.
Right. And you got to give a rose to a guy. It's not like you're exactly in Anbar province right now fighting ISIS.
She's a hero to me, guys.
You look up to
just
her.
Just a show of bravery by her. Much like Rose.
Now, let me ask you a question. is her presentation on The Bachelor braver than my coming to work with a cold 2 weeks ago?
I'm not going to go that far, Ro, but it's right up there.
You think so?
Yeah, there's some moving stuff by her.
You guys are missing one point, though, that TMZ is pointing out. It's because she prefers the white guys, that she's going to take some heat when she eliminates all the black dudes.
We all have preference.
Okay. So just watch out, okay, because more tears coming.
Mother of God.
That's the point, that she's going to end up with a white guy, and I almost said something really bad there. And then she's all of a sudden being, oh, I see. Oh, yeah.
We know who you are now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's it's going to be that. All right.
What show is this?
The Bachelorette. Oh. The most important show on television. It's in 60 minutes. All right. And finally.
Number one.
Jimmy Fallon is mad.
Oh.
Jimmy Fallon has declared this 2017 summer the summer of stash for the mustache. He wants to grow out these big, like, handlebar, like, 70s kind of mustache.
Mm-hmm.
But then he got mad because Will Ferrell showed up with a gigantic Wilford Brimley-style mustache. That's the biggest, yes, hairiest, like a marsupial on your upper lip.
Right, something like an animal, dead animal just kind of sitting there.
And, well, Fallon didn't like it.
Can I touch it?
If you dare, yeah.
I mean, how long have you been growing this guy?
I've been growing this for like a week at least.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah.
At least a week.
Yeah,
I mean, it's long enough to be a hairpiece.
It's full of wisdom.
What?
It's a wise mustache.
It's full of wisdom. It really is.
I look like a guy you don't want to sit next to on an airplane, right?
I like that guy.
I'm going to lean right into you. We're going to talk the whole flight.
You know, there's something about the mustache that, I mean, in the facial hair, it's in.
It is.
Dabbled in it myself. But you got to have the whole thing going. I think the mustache alone indicates something. And I'm not sure what it indicates, but it tells you.
A creeper vibe?
It does. It's a little, it's got a little like... Cosby-esque kind of feel to it, yeah. Don't drink the drink when the guy sends it over to you with the full mustache.
It's good advice.
Yeah.
Probably don't drink the drink anyway. But yes.
If it's a nice looking... No, I'm just kidding.
Now, what's also weird is the full beard without the mustache.
Oh,
where
right.
The guy's like, shave that.
Do you see that? I don't
see
that.
Yeah, very Abraham Lincoln kind of thing going on there.
Mm-hmm. Just like a sort of a weird neck beard thing going
on. Yeah, neck beard, and then the thing with that. And that's weird, yeah, too. Like, you're a Civil
Normally
War reenactor.
It's a bald guy with that.
Yeah.
You know, he's trying to make up for certain areas.
See, I got
not
it
a good look.
Mm-hmm.
Work with what you got, people.
That's been my motto. All right, are we ready here
ready
to close this thing up? Because it's about time.
Please.
Yeah, all right, thank you. It couldn't get worse.
The top five at five.
There's something about yesterday, how fast it all flies away. I don't know what it is about a goodbye kiss that makes you want to stay. We were crazy.
All right, it's Blake Shelton. We're going to be in Chicago with Kelly Clarkson on the 1st of July.
Love me some Blake Shelton and Kelly Clarkson, by the way. Fun concert.
It is going to be fun.
The best American Idol winner, Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
She's the best. Carrie Underwood, I would say. Or Jennifer Hudson. She wasn't
definitely
a winner.
Definitely Ruben Studdard.
Jennifer Hudson didn't win.
No, contestant, but best on there.
Yeah. Definitely Clay Aiken.
You know, you're so right about that.
I don't even know which one won.
I'm
just naming people. I remember.
Ruben beat Clay Aiken, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, that's
major
right.
Upset. That's right.
It was.
That. That
was quite shocking.
Upset of the century. People are calling it.
And then Ruben changed his whole sound. Right? He went sort of gospel, and then
he was always sweaty. That's what I remember from him.
And we've never heard from him again.
No, we really haven't.
He had a good run.
The best.
Well, I think that's.
Was she the first? I think Kelly
Clarkson.
No. Yeah, she was.
She was the first. Kelly Clarkson was the first. But Carrie Underwood was a winner and probably the most successful of the winners, right?
She's just so great as an artist.
I just never watched that season, so I just don't care for her.
She's no Daughtry. I'm going to say that right now.
Daughtry was American Idol guy?
You don't know that?
Absolutely.
You're probably too young.
And he won.
Who watches a show past the first 2 weeks when everyone butchers the songs in the beginning? That's the best
and,
part.
And, you know, I can't believe Kelly Pickler didn't win.
Oh, yeah, that was a huge upset. The Kelly Pickler upset? That was a devastating upset.
Actually, when you think about the people you remember are not the actual winners.
Right, it's just the characters.
They're the ones you wanted to win.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Except I did not want Kelly Pickler to win. She was not that
good. Oh, I love
who
Kelly
would have wanted
Pickler.
That?
Every time I hear her name, I think of pickles.
I don't think her name's Kelly. I think it's something else, actually.
She kind of looks like a pickle, too.
Looks like a pickle? What?
I don't know her face.
She's recorded some good
songs.
If
a pickle was a human, it would be her.
I'll tell you who just, you know, shocked me.
Hmm.
Fantasia. Whatever happened to her?
Oh, good, good old Fantasia.
Fantasia Barrino. Yeah.
She had really long nails. I know. What? It's crazy what I remember.
Taylor Hicks. Anybody want to go to the Taylor Hicks show?
Taylor Hicks. Didn't he have like the premature grayish streaks in his hair?
He sang Elvis. He won.
Don't forget about David Cook.
By the way, Taylor Hicks also sang Vehicle. He made Vehicle a hit again.
He's great.
Oh, the Pride of Mount Prospect. Lee DeWise.
Oh, yeah.
Remember him?
Gosh, we can't forget him.
Yeah. Great town, Mount Prospect.
He's probably playing the fest now.
Chris Allen. You know, we could play a game. American Idol winner or
politician?
NFL lineman. And no one would be able to tell you the answer.
I don't know. I followed that show quite a bit.
Really?
Scott McCreary, really?
Oh, good old Scott McCreary. No idea.
That sounds like a famous person.
Yeah, well, he was a winner.
Oh.
How about this? And this one I don't remember at all. Philip Phillips.
I remember that name. I think I do. I just liked when they looked so scared. I felt their pain.
Well, that was the kind of cool thing to see the transformation. Even Carrie Underwood. It was such a transformation. She came out there.
How about Nick Frediani?
Oh, good old Nick Frediani.
Don't remember him.
Uh-huh. A little something?
Don't remember
him. Did he bring the judges a sub?
What?
They brought him a sub?
I don't know. No, he just sounds like an Italian guy.
Jordan Sparks, anybody? Anybody for Jordan? Chicago's very own.
Jordan Sparks.
Sure.
I think she went on to do some acting.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's in something now, I think. What is it?
And then there was who was the one? This is great. Your show is, when you have a radio, for all you young broadcasters at home, when you have a radio show, remember, start asking questions you don't know the answer to. Who was the one who was in that Broadway musical thing? She's been in a bunch of musicals. She's now a big TV actress.
McPhee.
Yeah, Catherine McPhee.
Catherine McPhee. She's does a lot.
She was on American Idol.
You get yes. Huh.
Were her parents she was like opera singers or something?
Wait, wasn't that that Asian guy too, the funny one?
Pants
William
on the ground.
Hung.
Oh, yeah. William Hung.
He was my favorite.
Would you like to listen to some William Hung?
Hung man.
It was right. I don't think William Hung even made it to Hollywood. Did he get the golden ticket?
No, he didn't.
No, but they featured him on there, you know.
The tryouts.
Tryouts.
Is that him? Talk to me. Tell me your name. You blow me off like it's all the same. You lit it fierce and I'm taking away like a bomb. Yeah, baby. Talk to me. Tell me your sign. There you go.
By the way, I was wrong. Bo Bice is the one who did Vehicle.
Oh, okay.
Remember Bo Bice?
I remember Bo. He was the rocker dude.
Now that they've announced that ABC is bringing American Idol back, after I'm going through this list, I don't want them to bring American Idol back.
Well, Ryan Seacrest.
Yeah, I'd rather listen to William Hung than any of these winners.
He wasn't that bad.
I know. I remember him a lot worse. I think it was his dance moves that really...
He did an Elton John song, didn't he? Didn't he do...
For his tryout, you mean?
Your song. He did some... Yeah.
Tiny Dancer, great tune.
I don't think so. Rocket Man, what was it? It was something really horrifying.
That's not one you should.
Adam Lambert.
Oh, I remember
Adam Lambert.
Jam.
There you go. Do we ever get to the lyrics? I hope not. This is William Hung.
Careful what you wish for.
Yeah, here we go.
Can you hit the post, bro?
I don't know. It's just going to keep going. Is this really Rocket Man? When does he start singing?
Big build-up.
This is the longest
really
intro of all times.
Mm-hmm.
What is the point of this?
He's waiting for the right time.
Oh, I feel it now. Oh, this is the remix. As opposed to the original.
miss the earth so much. I miss my wife. It's lonely out in space.
Oh my God.
Oh no.
Oh my God.
Hit it, man.
He couldn't even hit it with the auto tune.
Beautiful.
And I think it's gonna be a long, long time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
Sounded good in the shower when he was singing it to himself.
Mm-hmm.
But look, yeah, that's tough to do. And the
my
people who win are so good.
My mom says I was very good.
All right. Well, we wish. I don't even know how this even started, but we wish everybody
tickets to the show. Kelly Clarkson.
Oh, Kelly Clarkson, right. We were talking about the fact that they're going to be here for the DoD Warrior Games. Kelly Clarkson along with Blake Shelton. Not an American Idol winner, by the way. Thank God. Wait, you got William Hung singing R. Kelly? Oh, please tell me it's the one.
Oh, my gosh. I don't think I remember that.
Please tell me
did
it's Sex
happen?
In the Kitchen. Oh my God.
That's terrible.
My life was nothing but an awful song.
It's gorgeous.
But now I
oh,
know
yeah.
The meaning
oh, no.
Very sweet.
To love. I'm leaning on the everlasting arms. If I can see it.
You can really hold a note, can't you?
I can do it.
I'm not sure you even know the words.
Just it, there's nothing to it. I believe I can fly.
Oh, no.
I believe I can touch the sky. I think about it every night and day. Spread my wings and fly away.
Oh my God. All right, okay.
Yeah. Simon, cut him off.
Okay.
That's one of those songs you just don't touch.
That's
really
dreadful.
I loved
thanks,
when
John.
Simon would be mean.
Yeah, the show kind of lost something when he wasn't on.
By the way, I just like to say that I think that William Hung is an absolute musical genius.
Genius, you said?
Genius, yeah.
You'd pay to see his show.
I would pay $5 million to have William Hung
would.
Come and sing for my famille. At my Christmas party.
Is it in France?
It will be in France.
And fly
you
him
much.
First class.
Thank you. I don't have things to do there. I am not from France, even though I am from Kentucky.
Makes sense, the accent.
All right. And finally, how about this? Johnny Depp, would you like to hear him do this at your Christmas party?
You know, I'd like to say that I believe this is a better rendition than even the Eagles did.
I think he definitely doesn't know the words to that song.
No.
Banger.
By the way, I did pay the Eagles $30 million just to call me on my birthday.
Oh, it seems like money well spent.
If you weren't around earlier, we had the reenactment of the email exchange between Johnny Depp and his managers about the fact that he's not only broke,
mm-hmm.
but he has a $4 million line of credit at the bank, and he has $1 million in overdrafts. $1 million in overdrafts.
Oh, my gosh.
Even though he's going to make $75 million this year.
Somehow he can't make the math work.
He can't do it.
It's like he was living one monster paycheck to one monster paycheck.
Yes. That's
make
where that
20 million bucks or 35 million bucks a movie.
You know, the thing is, I also have, next time I'm on Pirates of the Caribbean, I should really just take the pirate chest with me, don't you think?
That might help.
It's only got one thing in common with Johnny, living paycheck to paycheck.
Right.
But he's got the monster paycheck out there.
Except
me to school one.
Ma.
Can't come doesn't up come with up, $1 million.
Please, could you find $1 million for me upstairs in the kitchen, Ma?
He says his family.
Johnny, Ma, make a meatloaf.
After you find $1 million, Ma, please try and like some meatloaf, Ma.
I only imagine what an eccentric guy like that eats.
I don't think it's meatloaf.
I don't think it's meatloaf.
Ma, could you please bring me some quinoa loaf?
Quinoa loaf.
Make it like you did in Kentucky.
I'm sure that's his childhood favorite.
All right. Violetta, WGN Traffic Trouble Spots.
But don't tell my heart, my achy, breaky heart. I just don't think he understands.
Judy Pilak mercifully has the news in 2 minutes.
The proposals before us represent a common sense compromise to put us on a better path. So, on the eve of what may become one of the most important legislative sessions in Illinois history, we're asking the General Assembly to do what those who came before us did that changed the course of history.
All right, there is the governor just speaking in a... It's a Facebook live broadcast, and everybody else took it.
Yeah. It was carried by all the major stations, locally.
Putting ourselves live here, and a little awkward before because the Facebook live went up first, and he was just kind of wandering around on Facebook live. It's the problem with Facebook live, people. Don't use it.
And you're always on camera and always on mic.
Yeah.
The other thing you find out the hard way.
All right, so that is what the president, that's what the governor is saying, not the president, the governor. But... Democratic response here from Lou Lang, state representative, and Representative Lang. I think one of the questions that most Illinoisans have, because it's very hard to follow the specifics of this for most of us, because what happens in Springfield often is confounding enough to those who have to actually do it, let alone people have to cover it or think about what the coverage is. Why can't these two sides, why haven't they been able to get together for the last 3 years? Because it does seem like there's good arguments on both sides that the other one's being the jerk here.
So that's a good question, and good evening. It's a pleasure to be with you. Mm-hmm. There's this public narrative out there that there's this war between two sides regarding the budget. And the fact is that the governor's office has not been engaged in the actual budget at all. For 3 years now, or close to 3 years now, he's been talking strictly about what he calls his turnaround agenda. And whether you like it or whether you don't like it, because of his proposals, he's been unwilling to actually do the budget. So in my 30 years in Springfield, each year before Governor Rauner, legislative leaders and the governor would sit down in a room and there'd be a budget. And each and every year before Bruce Rauner, whether we've had a Democratic governor or a Republican governor, we've had a budget. So the governor here tonight in his speech said we need to put the people's interest above all else. And we've been trying to do that. We've been trying to meet with the governor day after day after day to discuss the actual line items in the budget. But he's been unwilling to do that. And he talks about moving to a higher road. Well, is it a higher road to try to push this new Republican plan that is really just a rehash of an old plan that has $100 million in cuts to mental health or to slash our state university system, a plan that relies on $2 billion of phony savings in the pension system by proposing an unconstitutional pension plan. All we ask.
But can I stop you right there?
On the budget. Sure.
Let's just go through those talking points, point by point here. The budget is a problem for the state. The state is spending more than it is taking in, right? Mm-hmm. So, and part of it, and I know the initial response is going to be here, part of it is because the income tax rate got cut, right? So if we went back to the 5% income tax rate and you didn't touch property taxes, you might be able, you wouldn't fill this hole, but you'd get closer to it. You'd at least be able to make your payments on the debt, right? And well, then try to crawl back out.
Things. two things, if I may. First, if the income tax, when it increased to 5, it had not reverted back to 3.75, we'd have our bills paid off by now, all of them. Secondly, property taxes, Ro, have nothing to do with the state budget whatsoever.
Yes, but it does have to do with the Illinois consumer, the Illinois citizen. So I want to look at it from that perspective. So
that is absolutely true, but it has nothing whatsoever to do with the state budget. We in the Illinois House have 19 times passed the property tax freeze, 19 times. And at no time has the governor been interested in signing that bill. So we're prepared to sit with the governor today.
Because it was a temporary, because in part because it's about the amount of time. He wanted a 4-year freeze. You guys were willing to do a 2-year freeze. I mean, it was all about the mechanics of that. So
that may be, but that's what governors are supposed to do. Then they're supposed to sit down with the legislative leaders and hash that out.
I just want a solution here. That's all I want. I want an answer here. You work for me. He works for me.
Right.
I want this thing solved. And the problem is that you guys are talking past each other on this. And Illinoisans, in the meantime, Illinois businesses are having trouble. You saw the Cranes piece about Illinois, Chicago businesses specifically are having trouble attracting
key talent
and executives to work here because they're afraid of the taxes and the violence. We have a descending system here. We're watching Rome burn here, Representative
Lang.
Well,
and citizens are hurting, and when they hear that both of these taxes are going up, they wonder, are they feeding a system that's so broken that there's, you know, the cuts are necessary and some reforms are also necessary, aren't they?
Ro and Anna, we're for reforms and we're for cuts. In fact, the budget we've been working on is close to $2 billion in cuts. All we need is the governor to sit in the room with us and negotiate this rather than doing what he's doing, which is to make a speech like he did today. He has not had a meeting with legislative leaders in months. We can do this. And let me tell you.
But what about the legislative leaders meeting with the legislative leaders? And what about Mike Madigan? Remember, there was supposed to be a meeting. Both sides have played this game of not showing up, right? Mm-hmm. So the issue here is, leadership to leadership, sitting down. The Republicans know what the governor is willing to and not willing to sign, right? And then they have to go back to him. If the best deal possible is what Christine Rodogno and Durkin can get done here, then they've got to be able to go back and say, this is it. This is where we are. We got to do this. You got a week to do it, essentially. You have a week to do it.
I can tell you this. All legislators, all 177 legislators would like to do a budget. And so it can get done. I'm not telling you it can't get done. I'm just simply telling you it should have been done already. And when all of the appropriate negotiating partners enter the room, it can get done. But someone's going to have to say, well, some of my agenda items will have to wait for another time. So all legislators would say, and both sides of the aisle, is let's get this done. We agree with you. Nobody wants to leave town without a budget. Nobody wanted to leave town last year without a budget or the year before without a budget. But we need all the negotiating partners in the room. I think we can agree on that.
Do you get a sense that this will be taken seriously this time around, or is it the same thing?
Legislators want to accomplish getting this to the goal line. The Republican proposal of a few days ago isn't going to do it, but we're prepared to vet it. We're prepared to take the good parts of it. We're prepared to throw some ideas in on our own. But it can't be the governor's proposal of it's got to be my way. Just last week, his education guru said that the governor's going to veto the education formula funding bill that was passed in both chambers and put on his desk because it was only 90% of what he wanted. Now, who gets 90% in anything of what they want, particularly in Springfield? Right. And yet, the governor was prepared to veto a bill that would dramatically impact, in a positive way, schools all over the state of Illinois.
But in the meantime, obviously, the state hurts more and more and more. If we're flirting with junk bond status, the state of Illinois, and we're being warned of further ratings cuts, which cost citizens more who are already being taxed in really high levels and being told that we're going to be taxed with both property and income additionally as well. the time really matters. And, you know, you guys, they're in an overtime session now, so the simple majority no longer is enough. You guys have to come together. Before, you didn't pass one when you could have had a simple majority, and now this is where we sit. And what do you tell citizens about the hope that we're going to have this budget? This is what we all expect is your job to do, and we'd like to see done.
Right.
So that we don't, there isn't more pain, unnecessary pain.
It is our job. This is a job that also includes the governor of the state of Illinois. And I can tell you that we'll know a lot more in the next few days about what direction both sides wish to take. I know that if you talk to individual legislators, as I have indicated today, people want a budget. There isn't a single legislator that doesn't want to finish this. And we feel that it is our job, but we also feel that there's a person on the second floor of the Capitol building named Governor Bruce Rauner who has to be involved in this process.
Let me ask you really quickly, because one of the things he's holding out for here, he just mentioned it in this speech that he gave, address that he gave, is term limits. Why are term limits, since Illinois, and, you know, with 30 years, it's an interesting thing that you mentioned that, because I've been covering this for approximately 30 years. You've been there for 30 years, and it's been a failure. So this state is in trouble now. Why wouldn't we want to, as the voters, not, I mean, you're in the job, but it's sitting out here. If you weren't in the job and you were here as an Illinois citizen, why wouldn't we want term limits here?
Well, I'm speaking for myself only because I have colleagues that support term limits, but I do not. And not because it'll impact me, because any term limit we would pass would be another 8 or 10 years. So it won't impact me, but there's many reasons that this really doesn't work. First, when legislators are only in office a limited number of years, they spend all of their years in office looking for their next job. Second, when you do this, you turn the place over to lobbyists and staff people who continue to be here year after year as members leave. Next, voters ought to have an opportunity to elect whoever they want. I have a term limit. It's called an election. I run every 2 years. And so there's a lot of reasons that voters should be wary of this. I know that it's popular. I know that when people are frustrated, as they are today, with the failure of our state in many ways, they say, well, out with everybody, but not so quick. You don't want to throw people away who are experts at what they do. Take someone who's an expert in revenue or an expert in...
well, whoever they are should get fired anyway, because the system is broken. It is broken, and this is an embarrassment, and it's devastating. I love this city. I love this state. This is my home. I want to stay here. Mm-hmm. It is become increasingly difficult to feel like we are heading in the right direction. As much as I want, I know all you guys, right? I mean, we all sit down, we see each other, we work in the same sort of an environment, we know each other. I don't understand how this has gotten to this point. It's ridiculous. It's rampant inability. It's incompetence in Springfield for this system to work. I cannot understand. And that we could talk, and, you know, Bruce Rauner is just, you know, the latest iteration of a series of failed governors in this state, and the legislature, run by guys who've been there forever, right? Is again incompetent, because if you gave them everything that they wanted, if we gave you everything you wanted, you still misspend the money, right? I mean, it's crazy, Lou. You've been there. You've seen it. You know how much waste there is down there, and who actually cuts it with a knife? You know it's there. It's
so
unbelievable.
Ro, I'm going to disagree with you on one premise, which is that there's a lot of waste in government. I would submit to you that when I got here a long time ago, there was a lot of waste. And maybe 10 years ago, there was a lot of waste. But I can tell you that the appropriations committees in the House and in the Senate have done a very good and noble job for a long period of time to cut that waste out. We found another billion plus to cut, and we can do that. But we need a little more revenue to run the state of Illinois the way it needs to be run.
Hey, listen, I don't think anybody's going to argue that we're not going back to 5%. No one's going to argue that. I mean, I think the governor's would even sign that. But the thing is, if you go to 5%, you risk driving the state further away from growth and expansion. That's the issue. Now, it's probably a risk that has to be taken. But in the meantime, you got to show that there's going to be some sort of reform. You got to, in order to say to residents and businesses that want to be here, because Chicago is a great city and the state of Illinois is a great city, a great state. There's a lot of incredible opportunity here, right? There's the, you know, from infrastructure, transportation, the, you know, farmland, this incredible dynamics of the economy of Chicago. All of those things should be attractive to people, to individuals and to businesses. And people are going, man, I don't know. It's too messed up over there. I don't want to deal with it. There's crime. There's this. There's that. And it's got to stop. And you got to do one or the other. You got to at least right the ship. Something has to be done here. Because if you don't, you've lost it. And again, I understand your arguments about term limits, but why? Who wants any of this to continue? It's insane. And I don't get worked up about state politics.
No.
Because I figure it's been a cesspool since I've been covering it since I was 12. So it doesn't matter anymore. Because Lou, you and I are the same age. We're both 39. Uh-huh. There is no reason for this to go on like this. All right.
Amen.
I've said what I had to say. Lou, thank you for sitting here and putting up with it.
Do you feel better now, Ro?
Nope. Not at all. Not one bit. I will when you pass a budget.
Either do I, but I pledge to you this. My caucus is prepared to do a budget. We've been prepared to do a budget, and we need willing participants to do the budget with, because you can't do it alone in a room. And so, and you can't do it with 177 legislators in a room either. It has to be done with leaders and a governor the way it's always been done. We're prepared to do that. I know the Senate Democrats are prepared to do that. And I know that many House Republicans I've spoken to are prepared to do that. We can get this done, but we need one participant who's busy making speeches and not coming into the room.
All right.
Got the last word. Thank you. Appreciate it. Lou
Lang. Great evening.
Thank you.
Stay right.
How am I supposed to have a great evening now?
What does that mean?
Be allowed.
Well, there's reason to be.
Can I at least get out of here if I have to?
Pods are headed out of Dodge, but not before one last meet and greet with a few fastballs at the friendly confines. Cubs Padres Wednesday at 1, WGN TV Sports.
Judy Pilak standing by at the WGN News. I've lost my mind.
I liked what you had to say.
Okay, fine. We're going to do some good for some people on the other side. I'm mad now. I've got to get back. It's the Rokon Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. I'm trying to retain my composure, and I don't know if it's going to work.
It was a welcome speech. A lot of people wanted to hear. I did. I liked it.
Let's do something good here.
Yes.
First of all, we're going to meet two people here. We're going to establish the problem and then come up with the solution. That's what we're going to do, because that's what we can do, because we actually have brains at work. That's why.
And we're committed to solving problems.
Than the people running in Springfield. All right, here we go.
Okay.
Cody Tranel is a COO, Chief Operating Officer of My Block, My Hood, My City. Now, this is a great organization, but Cody, you're going to be able to articulate it better than I am. So this is basically an empowerment organization for kids in this city, right?
Yeah, empowerment and exposure is what we really focus on. So we take youth from under-resourced neighborhoods and we expose them to more of opportunities within the city. So we focus on exposing them to new careers, cuisines, communities, and cultures.
Because the idea here is, and this is an absolutely shocking thing, is that this is an amazing city, right? You got the lakefront, you got downtown, you got these amazing things happening here.
No question.
And that the vast majority of kids who grow up in, as you're saying, under-resourced neighborhoods, it's south and west side of the city, never get downtown, never see it, don't realize that there's a whole other world outside their neighborhood. And that, so their dreams are limited, essentially, right? What they can see for themselves and they can see for the people around them, they think that their world is really that three or four square blocks that they have to live on, that they have to, and the violence encumbered and all the rest of it there, right?
Right, exactly. My partner, Jamal Cole, the founder and executive director, that was the whole reason behind why he started this organization. He was volunteering at Cook County Detention Center, and realized the youth there kept talking about how they had never left their block or their neighborhood. You know, so they didn't realize all the opportunities that were happening in this great city. So he wanted to do something about that.
So how many kids a year get benefited from this?
We work with 90 students right now. This is our first programming year this past school year.
So 90, and you're choosing schools. What's the age group for these kids?
High school students. All so right. We work specifically with high schools.
And get them to come downtown to see what businesses are like, see that there's a whole world down here where people aren't shooting each other, but they're actually doing things for each other.
Yes, exactly. Just trying to expose them to more opportunities and just a different view of Chicago.
Do they job shadow, or what's an example of what they would actually get to see do?
There's a few different things. Some job shadowing. So we work a lot with different companies that bring them in, show them what it would be like to actually work at that company, and also get to hear from people who grew up on the south and west sides of Chicago and, you know, kind of made it out and are successful now. But also we take them to museums, different communities. We just try to expose them to lots of different things.
Oh, I see.
All right. And so you started with 90. How many would you like to be able to have in your program?
Ideally, we want to continue to grow. We want to really infiltrate the South and West sides and serve as many students as possible. So, I mean, within the next 5 years, we're hoping to be serving 200 to 300 students
there you
if
go.
Possible.
Common sense. And each one teach one, right? Because then they go back to the community and they say, here's what I did. Here's something. There is a different world. Whether it's just in their own household to their siblings, or whether it's, you know, out into the street to whatever degree they can be heard out on the street. And it also gives them maybe a sense of, if I do stay on the straight and narrow, there are other opportunities for me if I can just stay away from it. And that's, you know, you've got like Urban Prep, which we do some work for, you know, organizations like that.
You set big goals.
That they if you can get those kids all together safely to the school and in the school, teach them a different way of looking at the world and understanding the world, then maybe they're getting, as much as the CPS teachers and administrators try, it's hard to cut through to a lot of those kids when the classrooms are out of control.
Right. Exactly. Right. And we really try to, you know, give them a real life perspective. They're learning about science, technology, engineering, math, different things like that they can take back to the classroom. So we're making that classroom learning much more applicable to real life.
Well, then keep them away from radio if they want to learn anything about real things.
Don't have them job shadow here.
They shouldn't. That would not be helpful. All right. Now, okay, so the idea here is to raise money for this, right? Mm-hmm. Which is a very worthwhile cause. And I think an innovative way of looking at this problem, a new way of looking at the problem, an innovative solution to it, right? Do we all agree on that? Everybody agree?
Like
Don't anybody
like
disagree with me right now. I am in no mood for that.
We can tell
all
that,
right.
For
okay.
sure.
Now, here's a solution. You want a solution? You want a really cool thing to do tomorrow night at the observation deck of the John Hancock Center?
And there is a bar, we were told.
Right. Hold on.
Oh, okay. You were going to get to that. You didn't overlook that.
360 Chicago Observation Deck, which is right there at the top of the Hancock Center, hosts its first ever overnight Insta-meet, the 360 Solstice Sleepover, benefiting this organization, My Block, My Hood, My City, which is the name of the organization we were just talking about. Now, Nicole Williamson is the GM at 360 Chicago. Now, if people want to buy tickets for this for tomorrow night, 100% of the proceeds go to this organization we were just talking about.
That's right. Absolutely every dollar we collect goes directly back to Cody and Jamal and My Block, My Hood, My City. We've worked with awesome sponsors and gotten everything donated. So we're working
great
with Lou Malnati's, Walgreens, Garrett's Popcorn. We've got great partners that are going to be out on the floor to help us. And so every dollar we earn goes directly back to the organization.
Right. Thanks to them for being part of the solution
exactly
as well.
So now let's talk. Now what happens tomorrow night? Because it is the summer solstice. This is the shortest night of the year, longest day of the year. So people show up at what time tomorrow night?
So it starts at 7:30.
At the top of the Hancock.
At the top of the Hancock, that's
okay.
Right.
Okay, and then it goes until?
7:30 the next morning.
Oh my God.
You get up at 7:30? You give an alarm clock for everybody?
Wakey
time.
Up. Okay. So you're going to get the latest sunset of the year. Mm-hmm. You're going to get the earliest sunrise of the year.
Well, that's worth it.
It's a Wednesday, so there also are fireworks at Navy Pier, and we have the best view of Navy Pier's fireworks. We have a band and a DJ. We have some late night movies.
Uh-oh.
We have a magician on the floor for the evening, so we found some fun ways to keep everybody entertained. And the idea is to work with Cody and Jamal in the organization and Nick Ulivieri, who's our photography ambassador, to reach out to the Instagram and photography community in Chicago and invite them in for this once-in-a-lifetime experience. We've never done this before. This is the first time we've done an overnight lock-in.
And the weather's going to be beautiful tomorrow.
Beautiful. Perfect for pictures.
Goodness.
And
yes.
Being able to see everything. It's like basically being part of the solution. A lot of times we talk about crime in our city and we read the headlines and we see the poor people, the innocent bystanders shot and things like that. And you always feel powerless about what can I do? What can I do? This seems to me about a way to really do something for people who need some help. So, and if you can't make it to this event, is there a way to donate?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're collecting money on behalf of My Block, My Hood, My City all month. So anyone that comes to visit us can donate. And I believe you can also donate directly on their website as well.
Yep, you can go to our website, formyblock.org.
Is that the number
donate.
Four?
The F-O-R.
F-O-R,
so
all that. Right.
Formyblock.org. We also sell apparel that you'll see, so that's another fun way to represent. And all the proceeds from the apparel go back to My Block, My Hood, My City. So you can see all the apparel on our website as well.
And by the way, the sun will set tomorrow night, at 8:29, and will rise at 5:15 in the morning. So
Stay up all night.
I think that's the idea. So, I mean, are there cots? I'd have to sleep.
I would have to sleep a couple
there
hours.
There aren't cots. You're welcome to bring a sleeping bag and a pillow if you'd like. We think probably half the crowd might decide to camp on the 94th floor and the rest are going to stay awake.
Is there like a camping area?
There's going to be a quiet corner.
A quiet corner.
Quiet corner. And we do have a few tickets left. So if anyone would like to come join us. And I agree. When I met Jamal and Cody a few months ago, the program and the vision they have is a meaningful but not overwhelming way to try to have an impact. Mm-hmm. We've welcomed an exploration in the past month up to the observation deck, and we had a wonderful time speaking with the kids, and we're talking about ways to partner with them for the 2017-18 school year. So
nice. We're
looking forward to growing this, and this was an opportunity we came up with to raise money for them.
Wow. This is a really great idea. What a great organization. What a great idea this is. So thank you for doing this. That is good. And plus, you're going to get into this beautiful, like tonight, sunset. That's going to be, but tomorrow we don't have the thunderstorms in the forecast. It's going to be beautiful and clear, severe clear, as they like to say. And you'll be able to see basically from the observation deck of the Hancock, you can see Michigan, you can see Indiana, you can see Iowa. I don't know if you can or you can't, but the land beyond O'Hare, that feels like Iowa to me. So I just figure that's what it is. Yeah. So it is a great, and you get to see the planes taking off and all that, which is really cool. And the fireworks, as you mentioned. All right.
The best views in the city. So this is a unique opportunity to get up and see them.
Spend the night there. That is really cool.
So for tickets and information, let's do it this way. Let's go to mbmhmc.com.
Oh my gosh.
For My Block, My Hood, My City.
Oh.
MBMHMC. My Block, My Hood, My City.com for tickets to that. And if people want to go to the observation deck this month at the top of the Hancock Center, go do it, and you can make a donation as well to that. It's a great experience up there.
You can also get tickets at 360chicago.com. We've got tickets available, as I said, just a handful left. The event will sell out. We have a limited capacity, so it is a private event. We're closing our doors to the public for the night.
And there's a bar. But people
and
can
a band.
But people can leave if they want to go home and go to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning. They're allowed to do that.
We'll
at whatever
reopen
time.
The doors at 5 if they want to go home and just come back for sunrise.
Oh. It's an option. Are you planning? So the hope is, I would assume, to do this again and again and again, right? This is the first of many, hopefully.
What we hope to be many, and we've had incredible feedback from the community. And so we do anticipate hosting these again in the future. But this is the first.
All right, very good. All right, see? I feel better now for the first time all day.
You don't sound like you feel better.
This is me feeling better right now.
Yeah, well.
All right, thank you both for being here. Violetta's got the WGN traffic trouble spots.